have now spent 2 days here on this retreat, sitting and walking and standing and being alive, both within this space and outside it, while in the outdoors. Begins to work on us, whether or not we want it to, whether or not we understand that that's happening. The process begins to work on us. We can come, I think, often and understandably to a retreat, hoping and wishing for a swift and direct linear transition from the chaos, the conflict, the confusion of our lives to clarity, peace, ease, well-being. And it would be really nice if when we came along to a retreat, that's what happened. And I can assure you that if either of us knew the instructions to give you that would make it happen, we wouldn't be holding back. But actually, of course, as you know, that's not what happens. What we see is that there are cycles in our experience, cycles in our life, of times when it is more dense, compacted, contracted, we feel more reactive or resistant or fragmented or frustrated or confused. And there are times when we feel more connected or collected, or we feel more present or in touch or sensitive or open or receptive. And yet there doesn't seem to be a sort of a button you can push that makes us become that. And yet there is a process and a journey which we are undertaking which supports and facilitates that happening. And we could call this the journey of our hearts opening, the journey of our life's awakening. And our journey is not one as one or two raised the concern from some of what had been spoken about last night. It is not one in which we become a passive, accepting victim of our life and have no ability to respond to it. In fact, it's very much about learning to respond in a way that actually makes a difference, in a way that's actually helpful, that's beneficial, that is actually transformative, rather than that adds to the problem, that compounds the situation or the difficulty we wish to find release from. So, practice is essentially to recognize the way we are responding to life, the way we are interpreting life, and to transform those responses or reactions towards being in the world that is actually in harmony with life, rather than in reaction to it. So we're very much concerned with responding to life. And yet, to the journey of transforming, we need to consider, we need to understand where we begin. Which is why much of the emphasis in a retreat initially, and in fact ongoing through our practice, is with this process of just coming back and connecting with where we are. Because this is the process whereby we come to see what we're doing. Now, it's not going to be news to any of you, I suspect, to hear that at times life can be quite hard, can be quite challenging. Being on a retreat, whether it be a regular kind of retreat or this particular form, we can also see that there are ways and times in which it's challenging to us. And examining how we respond to this is very much at the heart of what we're doing here. A story, a true account, an account of what I understand to be a true occurrence that I'd like to share with you, because I think it sheds a lot of light on how we tend to respond to the fact that life is difficult, or that life is often not the way we want it to be. That as I think commented on last night, we often feel that things are are not what we want or somehow out of place. It's an actual transcript of a radio conversation between a US naval ship with the Canadian authorities off the coast of Newfoundland in October 1995. And it begins with the communication from the Americans. Please divert your course 15 degrees north to avoid a collision. The Canadians responded. Recommend you divert your course 15 degrees south to avoid a collision. The Americans responded, this is the captain of a US Navy ship. I say again, divert your course. The Canadians, no, I say again, you divert your course. This is all happening in, you know, that kind of telegram system they have on boats. So the last bit's in capital letters, which I presume means something like shouting. And it goes, this, the Americans again, this is the aircraft carrier USS Lincoln, the second largest ship in the United States Atlantic Fleet. We are accompanied by three destroyers, three cruisers, and numerous support vessels. I demand that you change your course 15 degrees north. That's 15 degrees north. Or countermeasures will be undertaken to ensure the safety of this ship. The Canadians. This is a lighthouse. You know that word? Is there a...
Migdalo.
This is a migdalo. Your call. Kind of humorous to reflect upon the situation, isn't it? How so many times we become perhaps like the American ship, so much wanting that which is difficult or threatening to us to get out of the way, that we try and puff ourselves up, that we become angry with others or angry with ourselves, somehow trying to exert pressure through threat or force upon life. Seems that just as the lighthouse could not get out of the way of the ship, so too, life cannot be other than as it is. And this encounter, we could say perhaps even confrontation, that is very much part of a retreat, is an encounter that's going on all the time, but that we really don't open our eyes to that often. Because it's rather uncomfortable and perhaps even, as I imagine for the captain of that American ship, a little embarrassing to discover that you've been trying to make something get out of the way when really it was you that needed to accommodate the lighthouse. And there really is no other option here if you wish to avoid a collision. And it is funny and it's a little embarrassing to reflect for oneself how often we do this. Did anyone wonder today, or wish, or think, you know, why is this hill here? You know, do we have to go over this thing? Or that rock that I just kicked my foot against? Or I'm sitting on top of and it's kind of uncomfortable? We often think that somehow it shouldn't be this way. And what happens when we think that and don't examine it, is do we actually try and block it out? We don't want to let it in. We don't want to imagine that maybe it's ourselves that need to transform rather than the world. And we actually harden ourselves. We become more rigid. We become more tight. We become more fixed in our views and ideas about what should or should not be. And physically, we actually contract. Surprising that this happens because we are, in fact, incredibly sensitive. Incredibly sensitive beings. You know, we come into this world and we're soft and vulnerable and tender, and the world in comparison is incredibly harsh physically compared to what we came from when we entered this world. And equally in terms of emotionality, when we come from a place of being held and safe, to a place in which we are often unsafe, often abandoned, often threatened or hurt. And we feel like we have no choice but to defend ourselves, to protect ourselves. I mean, we're just so incredibly sensitive as human beings. You know, physically, how hard it is to get comfortable. It's because we're sensitive. Actually, be grateful that you feel discomfort. Because when you stop doing that, it's a loss. It's an incredible loss. We feel things so deeply. If we really let ourselves meet our experience, we feel things so deeply. The degree of sensitivity is illustrated rather, I think, wonderfully in a story that involves an encounter between a samurai, a warrior in Japan in the Middle Ages, who encountered a small and rather old and wrinkled monk sitting on the side of the road. And the samurai had been pondering and puzzling over this deep question. And he came to this old monk and he said, "Monk, I have a question. You are a spiritual man. Perhaps you can tell me the answer. What is the difference between heaven and hell?" Monk looked up at him. And he said, "Samurai, your clothes are dirty. Your sword is rusty. You are unshaven, and samurai, you smell bad. You are a disgrace to your noble order. Why should I speak to you?" A samurai, proud warrior, pulled his sword out. He was just about to take the head of this little pipsqueak monk, who happened to be a Zen master, just about to take it right off in one go. And the little monk, sitting there looking up at him as he lifted his sword, said, "That's hell." Because he was deeply interested in his question, the samurai realized that this little monk had just risked his life to show him that hell was actually where you were so full of anger and hatred and your protecting of your self-identity and your pride or whatever, that you would kill someone for just their words. You know, if that's hell, to be caught in that hatred, that alienation, that anger, this is hell. And in realizing that this little fellow had risked his life to give him this message, he was just so filled with gratitude and appreciation and love and just grace and how beautiful. He was just beaming down at the little monk who looked up at him and said, "That's heaven." It's a wonderful teaching in itself to understand what heaven and hell are. But equally it points to how sensitive we are, that just a few words, and I'm sure we've probably all encountered those few words in both their forms. The one thing that cuts us to the core, that enrages us, that we might even kill, or think about it perhaps, to destroy what we see as the source of that pain. And we've also at times, all of us I'm sure, been touched by something that was beautiful, that was just so amazing, that was like blessing to us, and we felt just opened up in our heart, and we knew that there was something beautiful and precious in life that was not far away from us. That sensitivity that we have easily becomes lost when we live in the busyness and the rush of life, because it feels like there's no time to take in the fullness, the depth, the intensity of our life. It's like it's too much. And we learn, it seems, to begin to stay distant, to stay away, to keep ourselves, we think, safe, but actually disconnected. It's not easy when we feel so deeply, when we're so sensitive. It's not easy to stay open in life. But the price of blocking out those things that we are sensitive to is to become numb, to become hard, to become disconnected. In armoring ourselves to protect ourselves from being impinged upon, we find ourselves, rather than protected, we find ourselves imprisoned within that rigidity, that solidification, that hardness. And the process and the practice of meditation begins slowly but unstoppably to melt, to dissolve, and to strip away that armoring. Those defensive shields that are both energetic, psychic, and physical. That's three. Anyway, all three of those things. By keeping on coming back into contact with our experience. Doesn't matter whether we're doing it with a mind that's calm and clear and bright and steady and free of thinking or reactivity. Or whether we're doing it with a mind that's kind of at times scattered or drowsy or not quite sure what's going on. That process of coming back into contact with our experience again and again, that very contact, that allowing ourselves to feel, to become resensitized to our experience, this actually begins to soften, to moisten, to lubricate our hearts and our very being. By consciously inhabiting body, heart, and mind, in whatever circumstance, in whatever situation, which we begin to do more and more as we realize we can't actually control what touches us or prevent ourselves from being touched. Because even in the very act of trying to protect ourselves, we actually find ourselves touched by something even more painful. Difficult as it is to experience that which is sharp or harsh on our tender sensitivity, even more difficult it is when we realize we've become disconnected or numb or shut down. One of the deepest pains we can carry in our hearts is the sense of not actually feeling open and connected or in touch. And at times we encounter this in our practice, in our experience, places in our body that we can't feel. They're there, but we can't really enter them with our attention. There's nothing there, it seems. Or places in our heart where we feel distant, disconnected. We feel like, I'm not really here. I can't really go there. I can't really come into my own life. And in those places, what we're asked to do is to actually be with that experience. Actually meet, feel into, allow space for that place where we don't feel. Because the fact that we know we don't feel, this is what's remarkable. We actually feel that. That is the feeling, the experience is an absence that we're sensitive to. Because we know what it's like when that absence isn't there. We know what it's like to feel. And we grieve that loss of feeling. In the depth of our heart, we grieve it. Although at times in our attempt to avoid being impacted, we might seek it. In the core of us, actually, we do not wish to be out of contact, disconnected, or cut off from our life. It asks of us a great courage, actually, to undertake and to go through this journey and this process. It asks of us a great courage and a trust, really. Because in order to actually allow ourselves to soften, and we could say come back to life, in order to allow our heart to feel deeply and truly into our life, we have to allow ourselves to be vulnerable. We can't just let in the things we'd like to let in. If we start keeping things out, we keep everything out. Both what we need and yearn for to nourish us, equally of that which we may be afraid of. Years ago, I was teaching a retreat in America, in Massachusetts, at the Insight Meditation Society there, and I was going for a walk in the woods. And on the path in front of me, near the pond, as I was walking, suddenly I saw this, it seemed, great big snake And I stopped dead still. We don't have any snakes in New Zealand where I come, not a single one. And snake is like, my whole body just goes rigid, which is exactly the thing I'm talking about. One freezes in fear. And then I looked at it, and it looked like it was about this big, and its body just right there on the path. And I noticed it wasn't moving. I was really also very interested as well as quite scared. And I noticed it wasn't moving, so I looked a bit more closely and took a step further and a couple more steps and actually got a little closer. It wasn't a snake. It was a snake's skin. It looked just like a snake to me. And the Buddha's teachings are full of images of snakes and mistaking snakes for ropes and ropes for snakes. And I could spend the rest of the evening on that theme, which isn't what I'm intending to do, but I just feel like I need to acknowledge it. And yet in this, first of all, there was that sense of, oh, look, how easily I was fooled. There was I terrified of a bit of, you know, discarded skin. But then I started to think, or to sense, well, what's happening here? What goes on that a snake discards its skin? I'm sure you probably all know very well without needing me to say. Snake skin is its protection, its armor, its safety. And yet, while it's got it on, it can't grow. Can't grow. And yet to get out of it, A, looks really like it must be quite unpleasant and uncomfortable. It seems like it's a pretty tight fit just to kind of squeeze out. And presumably, when a snake comes out, its skin is there, but it's got to be soft and tender and stretchy. It can't come out hard and strong and protective because it wouldn't be any bigger than the one it just got rid of. So it has to come out of that old skin vulnerable. And probably when it does that, it's going to feel a bit sort of scared if it sees any sort of hawks flying past. And for me, there was this really deep sense of, gosh, look what it has to go through every year. It has to strip its way or find its way out of that skin, that armor. And you know, if it doesn't do that, it will die. It has no choice. As human beings, if we don't undertake the challenging journey of actually allowing ourselves to shed our armor, we actually, it's not that we necessarily die insofar as we become dead, it's like, but we become deadened. And we feel that and we grieve that deeply. The loss of our potentiality to grow, the loss of our capacity and our natural, let's say, trajectory, our natural movement of life, which is towards a greater and fuller manifestation or revelation or just embodying of our potential. I'm aware those are lots of big words, and I hope you understand. Just becoming more and more of what we can be. I don't mean to suggest you don't understand big words. When we feel those places that are difficult in our bodies and in our hearts, and we do encounter them, to really come to them with tenderness, with gentleness, with a willingness to actually meet them, to include them, to see them not as just obstacles we have to somehow survive or transcend or find our way around, but actually as gateways that are inviting us more deeply into our life, into our heart. It is the process of opening to the difficult and the challenging that actually opens us. The process of encountering what seem like barriers is necessary. Those places where we're not sure we want to go. It's required, actually. Because otherwise our world gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And there are less and less places we can go. Less and less possibilities open to us. Closed down because of fear, because of not wanting to be touched by that which may want to know and to understand that a lot of this is to do with fear and the power that fear has in our minds. Fear is a powerful force. It drives so much of what goes on in the world, and so much of what goes on for ourselves in our lives. We could just consider usefully for a moment how much of our life has been spent trying to avoid that which we fear, trying to escape, to get away from, and to not experience that which feels threatening to us. How much? Can be an incredible amount of our life spent this way. As a mechanism, is really something we can understand and free ourselves from. And the first thing we need to understand is that fear is an experience that happens where we are, right here and now. But it's always involving a scenario or a story about somewhere else in the future that's based on something else that happened in the past. And when we get lost in that fear that takes us to the future, based on an experience or a story from the past, it can seem overwhelming. It can seem so painful. And we think we have to fix or solve or resolve or sort out that scenario that we're afraid of. Mark Twain, the author, once said, "Almost all of the worst experiences of my life never actually happened." It's like the worst experience is the bit where we're worrying about it. Have you ever noticed that even when that really difficult thing does happen, when it happens, you can deal with it. You respond to it. Maybe it's really difficult, but almost inevitably, it's not as bad as the worrying about it before it happened, and following which it often doesn't actually happen at all anyway. So coming back into our experience is to notice if there's fear, to actually be with it, to open to it, to allow it to be there. Fear, like any difficult experience, is transformed by our willingness to hold it, by the willingness we bring from our heart to embrace it, rather than to reject, avoid, or pull away from it. Which is a habit that we learnt perhaps when we were very young and very small and did not yet have our full adult capacity and maturity, in which maybe that was the only option. Shrink away, shrivel, close down, contract. But feeling the limitation of that, we actually are moved, we're drawn, we're invited by our life, not because of something someone says, but it's our life invites us to open again more fully. There's a beautiful poem by Wendell Berry. He said, entitled, "I Go Amongst Trees." "Amongst trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet, like ripples on water. My tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. Then what I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song." Just a very beautiful expression of this process, whereby when we really just sit and are still, when we're not so concerned with our busyness and all the things we have to do in our lives that have their place, but not so much here, part of what happens is the process is then that which we have not wanted to meet, it comes to us. It comes to us. And if we can simply be there, if we can live for a while in its sight, in the seeing of it, in the meeting of it, then the fear of it begins to dissolve. The capacity it has to control us is revealed as not inherent, not absolute, not something we are bound by. And it sings. We hear its song. It's like we see that life is moving and it's communicating with us. It's actually speaking to us. Those things that are difficult are things we need to hear from. We need to be willing to feel. If we wish to regain the wholeness, the fullness of our life, of our heart, of our remarkable human potential. To live with an open heart. To be free of fear. To be undefended in the face of life's immensity and unpredictability. To where we are, where we find ourselves. To notice what it feels like. To be able to say, oh, it feels like this. Or I feel it here in my body, and it's like this. To notice if we don't really want it to be there. And to let that be part of the experience. Often our reaction to the difficult, when we notice it, it simply becomes another experience. So that's the fear of... But then it's just fear. And then maybe we have some view that I shouldn't be having fear. And we have some judgment. Whatever's there for you, just to notice it. And rather than trying to resolve the situation by figuring out why it's here, why am I afraid, or why have I got this reaction of judgment, why am I being hard on myself for this particular experience, or blaming someone else for this experience, rather than trying to figure it out in that way, or getting lost in the story, just actually seeing what it feels like to be there with it, what it's like in your body. To, as it were, not in the sense of grabbing hold of, but in the sense of cradling, hold it. Hold the space in which we experience it. And the body is an immense and important resource for this. I give a lot of emphasis to body because the body is the place we can meet our process. We get so easily lost in our thoughts, overwhelmed by our emotions, but they're not separate from our body. And when we feel what it's like to have these patterns of difficult thinking or these strong or scary emotions, when we actually let ourselves contact that in our body and trust and see and recognize that we can, that there's space here for it because it's here. It couldn't be here if there wasn't space for it. Then what happens is that we actually feel that it's fluid. It's not fixed. It's not stuck. Our fear that it's always going to be here is just a fear. It's an idea. And yet, tragically, that idea, because of the way it leads us to resist the difficult experience and push away at it, it's like something's trying to pass through and we hold it at bay. And so it's trying to push through and we're stopping it. It's trying to move through and we're stopping it, so it seems to be hanging around. And then we think, it's true. It really is going to stay forever. My fear was right. But actually, when we can just let ourselves feel it, what we see is that it's moving. It's fluid. Life is unstoppably fluid. Except that our resistance creates the appearance. It's not an actuality. It's the appearance of a solidity, of a fixedness. And when we feel into it, and it's not easy, it's not something that's fun. Necessarily. And yet there's something true about it. Because if this is what's happening, it's true. There's something in that truth that we can trust. That it's our life actually again and again inviting us to come home. Open into where we are and what's happening here. To see, can I be with this? Can I occupy the space of my life in which this is happening? We sometimes think, I should let go. I should let go. We think letting go means it'll go away. That's not letting go. That's just a subtle form of pushing at something. It's more useful to think in terms of letting be. Just when it's difficult, let it be. Let yourself be. See how quickly we get angry with ourselves for our reaction or for our struggle. Really, we need to be very understanding that we're learning. We haven't got this all figured out yet. We can spend however many decades practicing reactivity and resistance and struggle, and we think that within a few days or weeks or even years we should somehow perfect releasing, softening and opening. No, it takes time. It takes time. But when we understand that this is what's needed, it's unstoppable. And that understanding needs to be really true to the recognition that it's not about manipulating the experience. Like Ram Dass once said, you can't be with it in order for it to go away, because it knows. And it does. And it creates more pressure, putting pressure on pressure. What pressure needs is space. Pressure is only something that hasn't got enough space. That's all it is. That's what creates pressure. Something that hasn't got enough space. So we learn and practice to give space. We place ourselves in the vastness of the natural world. One of the reasons to be out in the desert where there are no boundaries, where the horizons are vast, is because there's a sense of that space, a sense of that openness that we can feel. That actually sometimes speaks to us that the limitation of this body, the apparent finiteness of what we feel is my capacity or our capacity, is not the whole story. That when we feel like it's too much for me to let in my life or this difficult thing, whatever it might be, to see that actually there's something larger that it rests in, that we're a part of. Another poem by Wendell Berry, called The Peace of Wild Things. He writes, half of the world comes upon me, and I awake in fear at the slightest sound, in fear of what my life or my children's lives will be. I go down to where the woodrake rests in his beauty on the water. Woodrake's a kind of duck. And where the great heron feeds. I come into the presence of still water and feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. I come into the peace of wild things who do not trouble their lives with forethought of grief. For a while I rest in the grace of the world and am free. To come into the peace of wild things who do not trouble their lives or their hearts with forethought of grief. To understand what this means is to rest in the grace of the world and be free. With an open heart. A heart that opens when we embrace and are willing to meet even the fear and the contraction that may be there, without judging it or ourselves. Meet even the anger and the reactivity, the harshness and the hardness, without rejecting it or blaming ourselves or another. To meet it, to open to it, to inhabit it unconditionally, to be at peace with our life in this moment, so far as we're able to. And not demanding more of ourselves than that. Only so far as we're able to. Find this capacity more and more. Life passes through. Life passes through our being. And all sorts of strange things appear. Some of them rather wonderful. Some of them rather inexplicable. In this we can come to trust that actually life is large enough to hold all that is within us. And that we ourselves do not have to. quietly for a moment or two, please. May our journey and our practice together allow and support the opening of our hearts, that we may rest in life, ourselves and together. In ourselves and together with all beings. What announcements staff asked me to make. First of all, there's a green Ford whose alarm is ringing, apparently, and your battery will go flat, I'm informed. If that's yours, you might want to take care of it. And also, if any of you brought food or jars back from the walk that haven't yet returned them to the kitchen, please do so. They need to be cleaned to be used again. Some walking, and if the bell could be rung at the bell could be rung at 9:05. It's about 15 minutes from now, then we'll have a sitting together to finish the evening. Thank you.